Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news. Stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show, where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought, and we have made it to the fall. And by that, I don't mean to imply the fall of Western civilization, just the changing of the seasons. We're well into autumn here. An interesting fall lies ahead, and I'm just so glad to have you back on board, and I apologize for my absence. But I was out participating once again in the great Obama recovery. Again, traveling twice as many miles, talking with twice as many people to earn half as much money. Welcome to the new Obama economy. And speaking of the new Obama economy, let's dive right into the politics file. We've got a story from the White House dossier, whitehousedossier.com. Apparently, Mr. Obama has run into fundraising troubles. Obama campaign manager Jim Messina has told Democratic officials that the president will raise about $55 million in the quarter that ended on September 30th, and that's about $30 million less than he raised in the first quarter of his campaign. Big trouble. Now, normally, most of us, if we were to go out and hustle up $55 million, probably think we're in pretty good shape, but I believe Mr. Obama has a goal of raising $1 billion. And so his above-board fundraising seems to have dropped off. The Obama campaign, attributes part of the decline to the need for Obama to stay in Washington and address budget battles with Republicans, and that is, according to author Keith Coffler, he says, that is, sorry for the inconvenience, but that is the need to actually be president. So that's interrupting some of the above-board fundraising that Mr. Obama is doing. The author, Keith Coffler, points out that a Times article last Saturday said that many small donors are hesitant to start giving to Obama again, and it's no secret that even for Democrats, the thrill is gone. The thrill is gone! It's sad. Fortunately for Mr. Obama, he's funneling hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions of dollars, through his green energy initiatives so that he'll probably reach that $1 billion fairly easily in an underhanded, under-the-table fashion. And, of course, that's just my opinion. I have no evidence that anything untoward has occurred in any sectors of the economy, including the thriving green energy sector, that Mr. Obama and his energy department seem to be funding at a rapid pace. Maybe someone in the midstream media will keep track of all the money out and then all the donations that come into the DNC and to Barry Ho's campaign. But the thrill is gone, my friends. And as I said a few weeks ago, it could get uglier than Jimmy Carter out there with Mr. Ho. I mean, it's not going according to plan, at least ostensibly. So, I find it very hard to get interested in the election. I mean, there was a lot of things happening over this past week regarding Herman Cain and who's the guy from Texas with the hair? Jack Perry? Biff Perry? Rick Perry? Rick Perry. The other guy with the hair. The guy with the underwear, the holy underwear. Mitt Romney, that guy. I read a book about him. And his Muslim faith. I apologize. His Mormon faith, and apparently he's pretty serious about it. Having a conversation with some friends at church about Glenn Beck, and anyway, I pointed out that I think Glenn Beck was drunk when he got into Mormonism. He was like laying in the gutter, and the choice was, you know, join the Mormon church or die here in the gutter choking on your own vomit. And he chose the former. And you know, when you're in that bad of a position, you know. I can let something like that slide, at least for a while, Glenn. But Mr. Romney seems to be a little bit more serious and knowledgeable about his Mormon faith. Not that, that should disqualify him from being president, certainly not. I mean, right now we've got a raging Antichrist in the White House, in my humble opinion. I have no evidence that he's actually the Antichrist. Just that he acts in the spirit of Antichrist as it is described in the scriptures. And the fact that he's a stone Marxist, a wealth redistributionist, and a supporter of killing as many innocent people as possible, if that makes it more convenient to donate to his campaign. Aside from politics, I suppose that little spiel right there gives you an insight into as to how disinterested I am in the presidential matchup. Much more interested in football season, and I haven't watched a single game. So there's a gauge of my interest level. But let's jump into the war file. I said a few weeks ago that the most seismic event in yours and my lifetime was about to occur up the UN when the Arabs that live in and around the land of Israel were going to petition the United Nations officially for recognition as a state. Well, that event has occurred, and I read a few articles kind of making fun of us conservatives for suddenly taking the UN seriously, when in the past we joke about the UN being an ineffectual bureaucracy there on along the Hudson River. But keep in mind that Israel was established by the United Nations, and that the event that occurred just about a week ago with Mahmoud Abbas and Ban Ki-moon and all the other vowel-laden names that we all know from the United Nations. It was indeed a seismic event, ladies and gentlemen, and it's important to keep in mind that often seismic events start way, way underground and they take some time to come to the surface. But when they do come to the surface, they can be quite violent and terrifying. Let's go now to Mahmoud Abbas, who is, what is his official position? He's the Palestinian Authority's prime minister. And he says, quote, "Israel issues building permits to settlers so they can build in occupied Jerusalem, while it keeps confiscating lands in eastern Jerusalem and driving away Palestinians from their ancestral lands." So, just so you know, folks, confiscating land and driving Palestinians away from their ancestral land, that can be translated as Jews buying land and building houses. Yeah, are you aware that nowhere is the Israeli government just taking land away from the Arabs that live in and around the land of Israel? The Jews are buying land and they're building houses, and the Palestinian Authority equates this with confiscating land and driving Palestinians away from their ancestral lands. You'd think that you had Hebrews out there with bull whips whipping Arabs out of their homes and just moving in. But actually, the Jews are buying the land or buying the houses. In most cases, they're buying the Arab houses and then scraping them and building decent housing. But Mr. Abbas sees it quite differently. He said, this was the Friday before he petitioned for statehood. He said he was adamant about not recognizing Israel as a Jewish state. He said, quote, "They talk to us about the Jewish state, but I respond to them with a final answer. We shall not recognize a Jewish state." Well, that's a fine step in the right direction, Mr. Abbas, for the two-state solution, two states living side by side in peace and harmony, one refusing to recognize the legitimacy of the other. And we'll just have to keep an eye on the Richter reader. What do they call that device? I mean, I've heard of the Richter scale, but what do they actually? We don't know what that device is called. Anyway, I hope someone in Boulder is watching that device, because the seismic waves will be moving through this autumn season as we proceed toward the solstice, so to speak. All right. More from the war file? We've got more. From the Reuters Wire, this is from Pakistan. Apparently, Pakistan has warned the United States that it risks losing an ally if it keeps accusing Islam is bad of playing a double game in the war against militancy, escalating the crisis in relations between the two countries. Foreign Minister Hina Rabbani Kar. Foreign Minister Hina Rabbani Kar was responding to comments by the U.S. Joint Chief of Staff Admiral Michael Mullen, who said that Pakistan's top spy agency supported attacks on the U.S. embassy and other targets by the Haqqani Network, which is apparently an active network loosely affiliated with Al-Qaeda and Satan. And I think we just caught one of their top guys. Killed a lot of terrorists over the past week or so. Abdul Hassam, well, I forget their names exactly, but there's a lot of A's and H's involved. You stick a few M's in the middle and pretty much got them all covered. We've taken out a couple of Americans. Seems to be some concern about the United States government killing American terrorists without a trial. I find myself relatively unconcerned, since the United States government, if they want to take out any United States citizen, they have the power. They have the power, and you know, the government has the power of the sword. And I guess it's up to you and I to make sure that no governing official is ever elected who would misuse that power. And certainly we wouldn't find ourselves in that position now, right? Absolutely not. I want to congratulate Barry Ho and the military, of which he is commander-in-chief, for taking out, it's like a terrorist a day over the last week. It's been pretty cool. And we appreciate his efforts in that regard. But we disagree on some other fundamental issues that we might be able to get to later. But let's get back to Pakistan. Apparently, according to this article from Reuters, the most serious allegation leveled by the United States against Pakistan since they began an alliance in the war on terrorism a decade ago is this allegation that Pakistan's spies have either been infiltrated by the Haqqani Network or actually are the Haqqani Network, organizing terrorist attacks against U.S. troops and interests in the neighborhood. Hina. I apologize. Hina Rabbani Khan says, quote, "You will lose an ally. You cannot afford to alienate Pakistan. You cannot afford to alienate the Pakistani people." Was that a direct quote? We may be the only ones who had tape on that. Pretty impressive for our staff here. You see, Mike Mullen has alleged Haqqani operatives launched the bold attack 2 weeks ago on the Kabul embassy with the support of Pakistan's military intelligence. The charges came amid mounting exasperation in Washington as the Obama administration struggles to curb militancy in Pakistan and end the long war in Afghanistan. So you catch that? Barry's intent on curbing militancy and ending the war. I'm for ending militancy and winning the war, but that's one of the things that me and Barry disagree on. But I do agree on his use of the drones. Very, very cool. The drone is a really nifty weapon. The only thing that scares me is it seems like if you have a cell phone and GPS, you might be able to work one of these drones to do just about whatever you want. And there are definitely some bad actors out there who are intent in doing bad things with radio-controlled aircraft. And in this modern age, well, it just makes me nervous. Anything else here from Pakistan? Oh, yes, not to be concerned, ladies and gentlemen, but the United States depends on Pakistan for supply routes to U.S. troops fighting in Afghanistan and as a base for, our unmanned U.S. drones. So we're kind of walking a tightrope with the Pakistanis. And it's a shame that we have to be in that position. But seeing as the West gave up on the effort to evangelize the Muslim world about 100 years ago, what would you expect to develop? We end up right where we are. Pakistani Prime Minister Yusuf Raza Gilani says, quote, "The message for America is they can't live with us and you can't live without us." You are a very bad man. That was Prime Minister Yusuf Raza, whatever. All right. So let's move from the war file into the bad religion file. This is a story that caught my attention earlier this week. I've been following it all week. This is from Fox News. Iran State Media put out a stunning report Saturday claiming that imprisoned Christian pastor Yusuf Nadarkhani is facing the death sentence not for renouncing his religion, not for renouncing Islam and committing the crime of apostasy, but which that's been reported now for the past several weeks. But all of a sudden, they say, no, he's actually being charged with rape and extortion. Now, according to lawyers who are trying to help this Christian pastor, they say, quote, there's been no mention of any other charges other than apostasy up until now in the trial documents that we've reviewed, unquote. In a ruling from the Iranian Supreme Court, Nadarkhani was sentenced to execution by hanging for, quote, turning his back on Islam, unquote, and, quote, converting Muslims to Christianity. So here we've got a Christian pastor in Iran being threatened with execution. And I think it's private charities and low-level legislators and washed-up politicians like John McCain who are speaking up. I haven't seen anything official from the Satan administration, I mean, the Obama administration regarding this. Anyway, Fox News obtained a copy of the ruling from the Iranian Supreme Court, and there's not a single mention of rape or extortion allegations, but there was mention of hanging for turning his back on Islam and converting Muslims to Christianity. Is that why we gave up trying to evangelize the Muslims? Because we're afraid? That's pretty pathetic. I mean, if that's the case, if we gave up because we're afraid that they're going to be mad at us and blow us up and kill us, well, I mean, what kind of Christian are you that you're afraid to die evangelizing the lost heathens of the world? America? What kind of Christians are we? I mean, it's just a pretty sad statement on the state of Christianity in the West. But anyway, folks, not to be too worried, Nadarkhani's attorney, Muhammad Ali Dadka, he told the Associated Press he believes there's a 95% chance of acquittal on the apostasy charges. No comment yet on how quickly the Iranians plan to hustle up some charges of rape and extortion, whatever else they need. But my guess is this is just another incident of brinksmanship as the Iranians continue to build their nuclear weapons and distract us in any way humanly possible. But don't worry, folks. Your military has it well in hand. Let's go to the Washington Times. They report that with homosexuals now able to serve openly in the military, the gay rights movement's next battleground is to persuade the Barry Ho administration to end the armed forces' ban on transgendered service. That includes transsexuals and cross-dressers. That's their next step. We've got a quote here from Vincent Paolo Viano, a spokesman for the 6,000-member Center for Transgender Equality. Yeah, that's right, the 6,000-member Center for Transgender Equality. What a confusing pile that must be at their annual convention. Can you imagine? Wow. Just figuring out the men's and women's rooms alone has to be a challenge. But according to Vincent Paolo Viano, he says, our position is that the military should allow open service for transgendered people. The Service Members Legal Defense Network's push to end the military's gay ban, and we're urging President Obama to sign an executive order prohibiting discrimination based on gender identity. At which point someone said, what's your gender identity? Actually, I asked that because I just wasn't sure if I should do a homo lisp because this guy might have been a girl and he might not lisp at all. What's the deal with after the surgery, do they still lisp or do they try to act more manly? Well, I guess that would be if they were a woman to become a man, but then if it goes the other way. So you see how confusing this gets, folks. I mean, the folks who are issuing military uniforms What's going to happen when you start allowing the cross-dressers in? Can you imagine what a nightmare that's going to be up at S4 trying to figure out who to issue uniforms, who to issue the skirts, and who to issue the trousers to? I mean, that alone could cost us millions of dollars out of our defense budget. Anyway, the service members' legal defense network told the Washington Times that their goal is working toward transgender military service. A White House spokesman declined to provide Mr. Obama's position on transgenders in the military. I can't read any more of that. I think you're right. My extremely attractive audio engineer has a point that I really need to just avoid these stories. Back. Go ahead and put those guitars away, boy. Now, no matter what you say about 1980s hair metal and no matter how much hairspray and eyeliner they used, they were staunchly heterosexual. At least the boys in Autograph were. Anyway, we appreciate that, gentlemen. And I apologize to you, my dear, but I have to report on the United States Marine Corps' latest recruiting efforts. And in doing so, I simply cannot avoid the topic of...
doing this again.
Yeah. Okay, so you just take off your headphones and close the door, and then you won't have to hear any of it. From the New York Times, Dateline Tulsa, Oklahoma, Master Sergeant Anthony Henry is a top Marine recruiting trainer for the southwestern United States, and he set up a recruiting station at Tulsa's biggest gay community center in an effort... you know, the Marines, they always say first to fight. Well, the Marines want to be first and foremost out there on the front lines recruiting homosexuals, and I'm not surprised to see that the Marines did get a jump on all of the other services. And Master Sergeant Anthony Henry set up his table there. Let's see, do they say where this was? It was at, it's Tulsa's biggest gay community center. I guess that speaks for itself. Oh, it's the Dennis R. Neal Equality Center in downtown Tulsa. And reportedly, the master sergeant spent quite a bit of time in conversation with a trickle of gay women who came to ask about joining the Marines. Now, although Marines pride themselves on being the most testosterone-fueled of the services, they also ferociously promote their view of themselves as the best. And with the new law now changed, the Marines appear determined to prove that they will be better than the Army, Navy, Air Force, and Coast Guard at recruiting gay, lesbian, bisexual, and any other kind of potential service member that may walk by the recruiting table there. Now, judging by the traffic, according to the New York Times, judging by the traffic at the Tulsa Gay Rights Center last week, there will not be an immediate flood of homosexuals and lesbians to the Marine Corps. By 3 p.m., more than 4 hours after the Marine Master Sergeant had set up his booth opposite the center's AIDS quilt, only three women had wandered in, none of them ideal recruits. The first... was drooling over her tattoos. She was asked, she was in the National Guard, I see, and she was hoping maybe she could join the Marines under the new don't ask, don't tell, don't seek, don't smell policy. And, the fact that she was in the National Guard, the Marines just laughed at her. But they do that for anyone who's in the National Guard. Just force of habit. And, of course, I'm just kidding. We love the National Guard. The Marine Corps loves the National Guard. We just won't let you join our group. Let's see. The second had too many tattoos and was obviously intoxicated to some degree. And when asked about what kind of drugs he, she, or it was on, she was relatively incoherent, which means she probably won't make it. So, according to the New York Times, getting into the Marines is not easy for anyone right now. As the Marines tell it, only 1 in 10 applicants actually qualify to get into the Marine Corps. Most are turned away for a variety of afflictions, like asthma, attention deficit disorder, obesity, excessive tattoos, joint injury, lack of a high school diploma, and a history of drugs, beyond infrequent marijuana use. So it's pretty hard to get in the Marine Corps these days, whether you're straight or, I mean, whether you're normal or whether you're twisted and sick. It's funny, I was eating lunch with a friend whose son enlisted in the Navy. He actually raised his right hand and was sworn in on the day that Don't Ask, Don't Tell was repealed. And he asked... He asked the Master Chief, he went into the Navy. Did I mention the Navy? He went into the Navy. Yeah. He asked the Master Chief if there was anything he had to sign to make sure they knew that he was a heterosexual, male, normal. And like, what were the odds that he was going to, you know, like, have to share a room with a homosexual? And apparently the Master Chief told him, when it comes to that's what he said. He said, is there anything I can sign to let everyone know that I'm a heterosexual Christian? And to which the Master Chief allegedly replied, well, we have a don't ask, don't tell policy about that. And heavy on the don't tell. You just want to keep your mouth shut, kid. You know, if you smoked a little pot in high school, we've got a waiver for that. But I'm not sure if you're a Christian, conservative, heterosexual... We might not be, just keep quiet about it. All right. Now, so that's your military, ladies and gentlemen, as the Muslim hordes gather and build their nuclear weapons, and the terrorists circle around us, and the cells, the sleepers, begin to awake among us, that's where the focus of your military is, ladies and gentlemen. So, from that, we'll go to the culture file. And we go to the government school plantation. This is from WorldNet Daily. A team of experts in free speech has announced plans to challenge a decision by the panel of the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals that banishes the national motto, In God We Trust, from a school teacher's classroom, even while allowing the display of Tibetan prayer flags and the sayings of the Dalai Lama. Officials with the Thomas More Law Center last week confirmed that they will appeal the ruling from the three-judge panel of the Ninth Circuit to the full Supreme Court, because they want In God We Trust to remain on the wall of this particular classroom alongside the Tibetan prayer flags and the sayings of the Dalai Lama. What else does this teacher have on his wall? Let's see. He's got images of Buddha, a poster with the lyrics from John Lennon's anti-Christian song, Imagine, which you'll remember begins, Imagine there's no heaven, doodly-doo, I'm on my way to hell. I'm not sure that's exactly how that goes, but I was never a big John Lennon fan, or a big Beatles fan, for that matter. What else did he have? This teacher also has a poster with Hindu leader Mahatma Gandhi's 7 social sins, and, of course, the requisite poster of Muslim leader Malcolm X, and another of a poster of the Dalai Lama. So the Thomas More Law Center is spending its time and energy to make sure that In God We Trust stands alongside a panoply of pagan declarations, posters, and drug-addled song lyrics. Said Richard Thompson, president and chief counsel of the Thomas More Law Center, he said this teacher was simply exercising his free speech rights regarding the religious foundations of our nation. And he claims that the school district is expressing antagonism towards Christians in its decision to remove In God We Trust and keep all the other garbage up there on the wall. So, you know, Thomas More Center, I love you guys. You've done a lot of good work. They're active in assisting the personhood movement. But please stop wasting your time trying to preserve Christian liberty in the hellhole that is the government school plantation. It's just the Thomas More Law Center should simply use this as an example of why you should get your kids out of the government schools before they destroy their minds and bodies here on Earth and destroy their souls in the hereafter. Feel like I'm floating, it's dragging me. My head's about to kick. Insanity inside of me. It's like I'm wild. Feel like I'm floating. I'm hypnotized. These feelings can't be kids. His gravity is killing me. I can't stand up for more. And we're rounding second, headed for home here at the Weekly Worldview. Thank you, boys. Put those guitars away. Hang up that spandex. Put away the hairspray. We'll have you back in a few minutes. They don't wear spandex anymore, huh? And they don't need hairspray anymore because they don't have all that much hair. They've got hairdressers back there. Anyway, another staunchly heterosexual bump here at the Weekly Worldview. Now let's turn to bullying. I was talking about the government school plantation and what's going on there, and I've pointed out a number of times that if you are sending your children to the government schools, whether you're a Christian or not, it doesn't matter. If you send your kids to the government schools, you're sinning against your child and you're sinning against God, and there will be a price to pay in this life and in the next. So don't say you weren't warned. Let's go to humanevents.com. This is from Detroit. No, this is from places as diverse as Detroit, Michigan, Lawrenceville, Georgia, and Camden, Missouri. In all of these locations, the ACLU is sending letters and filing lawsuits seeking to disallow government schools' usage of certain internet filters. You see, the ACLU claims that their campaign is designed to end the blocking of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered websites. Yeah, can you imagine the ACLU wants kids to see that kind of stuff? What a shock. But in reality, the ACLU lawsuits would allow school children to access pornographic websites. Yes, that's what the ACLU is all about. The push, according to Human Events, is part of the ACLU's national campaign called Don't Filter Me Project. The Don't Filter Me Project, done in conjunction with Yale Law School. Yale Law School... My, how far we have fallen, Yale. Working with a bunch of deviant perverts to expose kids to filth and immorality in their tender and formative years. Let's see here. According to Human Events, no matter how the ACLU plays this argument, it's indefensible for a simple reason. It does not violate the First Amendment protected rights of anyone to block sexual sites in school. Now, who did that come from? I guess that's a commentary by some genius over at Human Events. He says that this doesn't violate the First Amendment, but that's not why it's wrong, genius. Pornography and homosexual are wicked and destructive and lead to death. And if you put it in front of my kid, I'll rip your head off. It's wrong because God said it's wrong. And it's documentably provable that it's wrong and destructive and inherently wicked and evil. That's why it's wrong. Has nothing to do with the first. Whether or not the First Amendment existed or not, it would still be wrong to allow pornography to be pumped into an educational facility containing anyone human, whether a minor or not. Let's see. And Human Events goes on. The author says, you don't believe me? Then look up the Trevor Project. GSA Network and GLSEN, or look up the books that homosexual activists websites want kids to read. And then they have a link in the Human Events article that links to all this homosexual pornography. Can you believe that? I mean, come on, we don't need a link, Human Events. I mean, I'm reading Human Events. I don't need to see this garbage. I'm pretty aware. Anyone who's actually reading Human Events, they don't need to see the pornography. We know what it is, for crying out loud. You don't need to link to it. Yuck. Anyway, So that's the state of the government school complex, the government school plantation that you may be sending your kid to every day. And if you are, well, you've heard my warning. And, well, if you don't like it, take it up with God on Judgment Day. Okay? All right. Again, I have to stop and apologize to my extremely attractive audio engineer. Because I've got to talk about cafeteria workers at the at the government school plantation. It's from WorldNet Daily. Parents of students in a California school district have been stunned by word that the school is allowing a man to work in the lunchroom dressed as a woman.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. And a law firm addressing the issue said these circumstances appear to be fueling a popular uprising against the California legislative plan that would require schools to indoctrinate children as young as 5 years old with the idea that homosexuality, transsexuality, and other alternative lifestyles are not only acceptable, but to be looked upon as models. Yes, that's what they want to teach your kids at the public school factory. And you'd be amazed at the number of parents who think this is good or fine or they're neutral on it. They just want to love everybody. But apparently, a sizable plurality of the people sending their kids to the public school plantation in California are getting a little bit upset because, in theory, it all sounds really just nice and loving and tolerant and acceptable. But when the lunch lady turns out to be the lunch man, that hits a little close to home. And you start to realize that this is not an academic exercise. This is actual perverts in close proximity to your child. My, my, how attitudes change when it hits close to home. Listen to this. When it hits close to what? Homo? You see, if you keep doing that, I won't stop doing these stories.
I'm sorry.
I got an email from someone earlier in the week asking me to please increase the volume of my stories mocking and ridiculing homosexuality. But they, I can't recall who exactly it was from, but they did point out that if it came to the point where it might strain the relationship here in the studios, that maybe I shouldn't pursue that path. But listen, a parent of two young girls was caught off guard recently when her daughters came home from school with questions about a man dressed like a woman on duty at the school cafeteria. The parent was further chagrined when officials in the Sierra Sands Unified School District confirmed the story but insisted their hands were tied. Okay, well, I'm just going to leave that alone. So the school district says, yes, we know that there's a perverted deviant in the lunchroom, but there's really not much we can do about it. They probably reminded the parents that, you know, you turned your kids over to us for the day. And you're tolerant, so sit down and shut up. Basically what they told the parents. There's nothing we can do about it. Why are you freaked out about it? You have a problem with that? You have a problem with a man dressing as a woman serving food to your children? You got a problem with that? Are you some kind of bigot or homophobe? You have to take your information down, send it to the principal's office. More from the WorldNet Daily article. A report from Pacific Justice. I don't know who these people are. Well, I guess it will become apparent. A report from Pacific Justice said, quote, what continues to floor the parents whose daughters attend kindergarten and third grade at an elementary school is that the employee's attire would not be permissible for students. The employee, you see, a substitute lunch duty worker. That's how lazy government workers are. They have substitute lunch ladies. Because these people are constantly taking vacations and, you know, spending the weekend at the bathhouse, whatever they're up to, these public school employees. Anyway, of course, that's just my opinion. I don't know where that came from. I must be bigoted. Anyway, the parents are upset because they said what do you call these people? Is this just a cross-dresser, or we don't know? Could be transgendered, could just be a cross-dresser, could just be confused. But the parents are upset because the employee was wearing makeup and a spaghetti strap shirt with his bra strap visible. to the students. District dress code policies for students banned both spaghetti straps and visible undergarments.
Yeah, so, how about that?
So here are these poor, confused parents trying to make the argument that the transgendered person, well, I don't know. See how confusing this all gets? They're saying, look, we understand that you allow cross-dressers, but his spaghetti straps are showing and his bra is showing. Isn't that a violation upon which you could take some action? And, you know, at which point the administration will probably tell them, look, we're already allowing deviants into the lunchroom. How do you expect us to enforce a dress code? Anyway, very disturbing that 90-some percent of Americans' children are growing up in the public education plantation. And the deviants are crawling out of the closet, and they're going to push all of us normal people into the closet, but hey, maybe out of the public schools. Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council, has prepared a video explaining the concerns and offering a preview of what Californians can expect to see should the repeal effort be unsuccessful. So money-grubbing Tony Perkins, phony pro-family activist, is out raising money on this, and he'll probably do very well. You know, money-grubbing Tony Perkins probably has a lot in common with Rahm Emanuel. Rahm Emanuel said, never let a crisis go to waste. And Tony Perkins believes, never let a controversy go to waste. Always raise money on every controversy, but never address the underlying problem, as Tony Perkins and the Family Research Council rely on such controversies to make their living and apparently have no intention of actually ending any of the practices that threaten the very life of the nation and our children. Tony Perkins, it makes me sick. I want to vomit when I hear his name. And he's supposedly a pro-life, pro-family activist, but he's really just pro-fundraising is what he's all about. As Tony Perkins has been at this for 20-some-odd years, more maybe, and how has the national cultural environment improved morally as Tony has raised millions and millions and millions and spent millions and millions and millions? One more from the public school factory. from Fox News, an honor student in Fort Worth, Texas, was sent to the principal's office and punished for telling classmates that he believed homosexuality was wrong. The young man's name is Dakota Airy, and he was in German class at the high school when the conversation shifted to religion and homosexuality in Germany. At some point during the conversation, according to Fox News, he turned to a friend and said he was a Christian, and that being a homosexual is wrong. Wow. Well, you just can't do that on the plantation, son. a teacher heard him and started yelling that he was going to write him up on an infraction and send him to the principal's office. Yeah, and he did. And the young man, Dakota Airy, was sentenced to 1 day in school suspension and 2 days of full suspension. His mother was shocked and flabbergasted, she said. I would say that while her mother has somehow done a decent job of instilling the kid with some morals, she's generally a moron if this shocks her. I really feel sorry for her. I guess I shouldn't call her a moron. I should just feel sorry for her and hope that someone reaches out to her and lets her know about the sin that she's fallen into. Let's see, the Fort Worth Independent School District has issued a statement, and it reads as the following. Quote, as a matter of course, Fort Worth ISD does not comment on specific employee or student-related issues. Suffice it to say that we are following district policy in our review of the circumstances, and any resolution will likewise be in accordance with district policy. And by the way, we prefer queers to straights, unquote. Oh, I made up that last part. I'm sorry. That will not be a part of the official policy at the school probably for a couple of years. The school rescinded the 2-day suspension so that Dakota would be allowed to play in an upcoming football game. Folks, remember, we may prefer queers to straights here at the Fort Worth ISD, but we prefer good high school football players over all else. There, so one thing in Texas, even if you're a homophobe, if you're good at football, you will be on the field Friday night. The Weekly Worldview. I'm Doug McBurney. We're circling third and headed for home. I hope you'll forgive me this week, folks. My head's a little fuzzy, and I don't know. I'm just not into it. Maybe I'm out of practice. Maybe I'm losing interest in the news. I don't know. I find that the news is far less interesting than managing my own life and my own family. And when I look at what's going on out there, I almost want to build a walled compound, dig a moat, and fill it with alligators. And just mount the machine guns on the wall and, I don't know, send someone out to Target twice a week to get stuff. And I don't know. Anyway, so I'm rapidly losing interest in commenting on the news of the day because, I don't know, I think I prefer to get out there and do something about it. And I try to do that in my daily life. I do. I try to bring it up whenever I can, the fact that there is a God, you're not him, and his standards, they are the standards. Whether you like it or not. But in my professional life, I find it's quite difficult quite often to bring that up. I try to wait until after the check has cleared before I make any moral pronouncements. But I make as many of them as I can. And maybe I need to just get fired back up because I know you're out there and you're listening and I know you need me. So here I am, back at the public school plantation. This is from Miami. From the NBC in Miami. Stephanie Pitsy, it's not Pitsy, I apologize. Stephanie Pisty confirmed assertions by police in Parker, Florida, that the people involved in the July murder of 16-year-old Jacob Hendershot were in a vampire cult. Pisty has been arrested and charged as an accessory to murder, and she said she sees herself as a modern-day Dracula. She says, quote, since I was like 12, every fiber in my body, basically everything I know, and I know this is going to sound crazy, but I believe that I am a vampire and part werewolf. That was 16-year-old Stephanie Pisty. As she told a local TV station there in Florida, she is a vampire and part werewolf. Her and her other vampire friends beat a kid to death. I'm not sure what the kid did, but they beat him to death, and now her defense is that she's a vampire. She says, now that I'm here in jail, I'm pretty much figuring out I'm going to stay here the rest of my life, unquote. So there's what your government school plantation is producing, werewolf-vampire hybrid murdering beasts. Pretty scary. All right, now let's go to the culture file. This is from Plano, Texas. A Collin County business is offering customers a break on the price of an oil change, normally $46. But if you will come in and quote a Bible verse, the oil change is just $19.99. Now that sounds like a pretty good deal. There's a coupon that was hung on doors in the local community. Big price, $19.99 oil change above the promised price on the coupon, reads a statement that says customers must quote the New Testament verse, John 3.16, to get the deal. Talk about an easy deal, right? John 3.16, who doesn't know that one? I imagine there's several heathens who are listening in the audience now who are scrambling for their Bible. Trying to figure out what exactly is John 3:16. I know I saw it at a football game. Anyway, We all remember. In fact, I'll go ahead and quote it because 1999 is a great deal for an oil change. I'm hoping I can bring a tape of the podcast down to the Quick Car on Custer Road in Plano because I'm going down to Houston in a couple weeks. I'm going to stop at the Quick Car and I'm going to quote this verse, John 3:16. Warning, 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 Will Robinson, there are Bible verses up ahead. For those in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity, we know here at the Weekly Worldview that you would like to censor anyone who would ever dare even consider the possibility of quoting a Bible verse in public. So this warning gives you fair notice that raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered, and let's go to the Bible, John 3:16. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. One of the all-time great Bible verses, one of my favorites. And wasn't that one of Al Gore's favorites? No? Well, that's right. Al Gore, it was John 16:3. Ladies and gentlemen, let's turn a couple of pages here to Al Gore's favorite verse, John 16:3. Well, and to really get the context of John 16:3, you really have to start in John 16:2, and I'm sure Al Gore knew that, as anyone whose favorite verse is John 16:3 knows that you really have to start with the final sentence. In John 16:2, where it says, "The time is coming that whoever kills you will think that he offers God a service." John 16:3, "And these things they will do to you because they have not known the Father nor me," said Jesus Christ. Those are all in red. That's Al Gore's favorite Bible verse. But I digress. There are a few folks in the greater Plano area who are upset that the Quick Car lube and change there is requiring them to quote a Bible verse in order to get the discount. One customer said, "Well, I think I may have forgot exactly what that one was. I had to go look it up online. And I was waiting in line, and I thought to myself, why should I be compelled to quote something I don't feel quite comfortable?" Quote, that unquote. That's one of the customers there at the Quick Car. Let's see, did he ever go through with... After a short discussion with the store manager about the verse, the customer declined to recite it and ended up paying more than $46 for his oil change. That was more than twice what he thought he was going to get when he went in with the coupon. But, you know, the owner of the store said, "You want to be a heathen? You want to be ignorant? Be ignorant. It's $46. The state attorney general there in Texas has had no comment on the issue and couldn't point out any laws that the store owner was breaking. Dallas attorney Andy Siegel, who has handled discrimination and denial of service cases before, said quote, "With no connection to federal funds or federal highways, the discount offer appears to be within the law," unquote. So that would almost imply that federal funds and federal highways and federal anything are against God. That's what that implies. So this lawyer knows that the only time you can't mention God is when there's federal money involved. And that should be a red flag to anyone and everyone, and certainly a sign of where our nation is. All right, now let's move into the culture file. We're rapidly running out of time. I want to go to CBS in Miami again. Is this? Yes, I guess it is. CBS in Miami. Texting has become a part of our life and has taken over conversations. A new study confirms that the majority of American adults prefer text messaging over voice conversations, with 73% using their phone to send texts. The article reports many of us prefer to write out our conversations rather than to actually speak to another human being. Adults sending or receiving an average of 41.5 messages on a typical day. That's adults over 24. Young adults send an average of 109 text messages on a normal day. And so people prefer to writing each other over speaking to each other. My Alexander Graham Bell must be shocked. He thought the ability to hear someone else's voice over the phone was a miracle. And it turns out, Alex, it's really mostly annoying. We'd rather just text so we don't, you know, nobody interrupts us and all of that. Although I still prefer, I actually probably do prefer email to telephone conversations. It depends on who you're talking to. There's some people I really enjoy talking to. And I don't text them, I just talk to them. Well, there you are. I mean, I don't know what that says about us. But there it is. Take it for what it's worth. I was talking to a young lady from Texas this past week who said she was going to have to either sell or shoot her horses. Yeah. She got some horse property down there outside the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and she runs about 19 horses. And she said, well, we're going to have to sell them or shoot them before Christmas because we can't afford hay no more. Can't afford hay no more, she said. Well, listen to this. Grapevine, Texas, from CBS in Dallas. If the drought wasn't enough for farmers and ranchers to struggle with, now they're facing a growing threat. Thieves are targeting pastures and barns for the suddenly valuable hay bales. Hay, I said, hay. Yes, hay, according to CBS, is the new target for thieves. Round bales that used to sell for $20 are now topping $175 for a round bale of hay. It's so valuable and becoming so rare that even the hay falling off the bales on the back of trucks is being picked up and put in bags and sold. So you've got the homeless in Texas are out along the highway scraping up any of the hay that might have fallen off the back of the truck. Well, that's got to be something to see, and possibly a threat to public safety. Hay is becoming so rare that one company in Grapevine, Texas, is paying people a finder's fee if they can hook them up with willing sellers of hay. Hay was once considered pretty much the bottom of the food chain, and it's $175 a bale. Anyway, if anybody's looking for horses, I know a lady who wants to sell nearly 24 of them. Because breaks her heart to think she might have to shoot him. And I'm with her on that. That would be a bummer. All right, I don't want to do the domestic tranquility stuff because it's too depressing. Let's close with... do I want to close with this thing from Chicago? A labor leader in Chicago hired back on with the city for one day and then retired, and he's now going to collect a salary of approximately... $158,000 a year. He was the president of the Chicago Federation of Labor. His name was Dennis Gannon. Labor leader, worked for the city years ago, and now he stands to collect approximately $5 million during his lifetime. Folks, there's too many thieves. You know, a culture can survive if there's some thieves. Punish them and we prevent thievery. But when the majority become thieves, and everyone in the government are thieves, and our leaders are thieves, well, then there's too many thieves, and you end up going into debt and bankruptcy. And, well, there you have it. Let's see, does Roseanne Barr have a solution here? Roseanne Barr, in an interview with Russia Today, which may be a magazine or a TV show in Russia, or it may be a part of NPR or PBS, I don't know. She gave an interview... She shared her solution for dealing with the rich and how the banks could repay all the money that we bailed them out with. She said, first, I would allow the guilty bankers to pay, you know, the ability to pay back anything over $100 million of personal wealth, because I believe in a maximum wage of $100 million. And if they're unable to live on that amount, you know, go to the re-education camps, and if that doesn't help, then you should be beheaded. That's what she, unquote, that's what Roseanne Barr said with a straight face. That tells you she's making less than $100 million a year. That's about all we can garner from that. Ladies and gentlemen, that's the Weekly Worldview for this week. If the Lord tarries, we will be back with you next week. I want to thank my friends at KGOV at Denver Bible Church, Personhood USA, American Rights of Life and Theology Online. I'll be back with you next week, should the Lord tarry. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.